Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Web TV is hot, and it's going to get hotter. A fusion of internet and television. A confusion for a lot of would-be users trying to figure out what's going on. And it's a big challenge to cable. This hour, On Point Web TV and what it may mean for you. You can join the conversation. Have you gone to Web TV? Cut the cord to cable? How's it going? What do you want the future of TV to look like? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Google's in it, Apple's in it, a whole lot of people are in it. Here's Google's, the big release of Google TV in May came out. Here's a commercial, kind of a primer, that Google threw up online for their version of Web TV.
If the web is so smart and our TVs are so fun to watch, why do we have to choose? Why can't they work together? Well, now they can. Introducing Google TV. Google TV brings everything that you love about the web to your television.
Everything you love about the web, everything you've got on TV, maybe. Joining me now from Phoenix, Arizona, is Sam Rosen, senior analyst of the digital home for ABI Research, forecasting and research firm. Sam, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Take us right from the sort of baseline here. What is Web TV? Now, we know it's a whole lot of things, and we'll get into that, but basically, what's Web TV?
Well, I think there's three fundamental pieces of Web TV. The first is bringing internet video from your PC to your TV or to your TV directly. The second piece of it is bringing music, photos, and videos, whether they're stored locally on your computer or sitting out on the web, to your TV. And the third piece is apps, like you use on your iPhone or your Android phone, and enabling software that runs on your TV. And so there's a lot of variations, but those are the basics.
Is it a full hybrid mixture of what we now see on television and what we now see on the internet? Can I reach out and have all of both if I go to Web TV?
It's getting there, but there's still barriers to that, largely the rights to the content. And so if you follow the battles between Hulu Plus and the content providers, or have seen that ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox have blocked their internet content going to the Google TV boxes, you see that there are barriers to getting everything together.
We'll talk about those barriers. There are a lot of players here, but let's say, okay, I don't quite get it yet, but I'm ready. I want Web TV. How do you do that?
Well, the good news is that it's closer and it's in many people's home, whether you realize it or not. The game consoles that you have, the Sony Xbox, the PlayStation 3, and the Nintendo Wii all have these capabilities, as do a lot of the connected Blu-ray players that people might be buying this year.
Now, capabilities to do what when you say that, Sam? Capabilities to...
Sure, to watch internet video. And I think there's five internet video sites that are really worth talking about. Mm-hmm. There's Netflix, YouTube, Hulu, Amazon Video On Demand, and Vudu. Mm-hmm. So Netflix is all about a lot of movies, but not necessarily the latest movies and older TV shows. It has a very deep catalog. It has about 18 million subscribers, so it really has a lot of traction. And they now have more people watching streaming video than they ship them the discs that they used to ship them. YouTube, I think most people are familiar with, a number of short clips that you can upload.
Dancing monkeys, finger puppets, and a whole lot more.
Right? And a whole lot more. I think the lectures that you can find mm-hmm. from TED and MIT and Carnegie Mellon mm-hmm. are things that people might watch more of if they were sitting in their living room instead of on their PC. And so I think YouTube has a lot of unharnessed potential that will open up when it comes to the TV. Hulu, of course, is sort of like a DVR without recording. And Hulu works on your PC. Hulu Plus is designed to come to your TV. And Hulu Plus is a subscription service that costs $8 a month. And it has a slightly deeper set of content, more current shows and more past shows. And so Hulu Plus is something that comes to your TV. And then if you're into the latest movies and don't want to go to that red box or aren't a Netflix subscriber, you can rent them one at a time from Amazon Video On Demand or Vudu Services. And all of this video can come straight to you, straight to your TV screen.
Okay, just with that lineup, we already realize this is not this is not your father's Oldsmobile. Sit in front of the TV, turn it on, and click to 300 channels. I mean, here's the internet providers. I mean, the internet video providers or sources, and they've all got different things to offer. I want to come to that. Let's stay with the box for a second. If they all have boxes, I'm not sure. People are talking about screen over?
I call them internet adapter boxes, which is Apple TV, Google TV, Roku Box, and Boxy. But if you talk about it embedded into your TV, which is the case in a number of TVs this year, it's simply an internet-connected TV. Same thing with a Blu-ray player, internet-connected Blu-ray player.
So this is the over-the-top video. That's what I'm looking for.
So over-the-top video refers to any video that comes over a broadband connection. So whether you have a cable modem or a DSL modem, anytime you watch video over that, it's called over-the-top video. And the distinction is important from a technology standpoint because it's harder to control. It's harder to make sure it looks good. It's harder to make sure it arrives on time. It plays continuously. And so it's very different. And so a lot of people are experiencing glitches with those, whether they don't have a fast enough connection or they haven't set up the network in their home correctly. So the fact that it's not what we call a managed network, in other words, it's not coming from Comcast or DirecTV or Dish Network or AT&T.
Or CBS or NBC or ABC or any of that.
Right.
Okay, so over-the-top video and all these boxes, there are a bazillion brand names out there. I mean, everybody at this point is beginning to hear Apple TV, Google TV, but there's Roku and Boxy and Seagate. And I mean, I'm looking here at charts with Sony Internet TV and Samsung stuff and Logitech Review and TiVo Premiere. Are these all over-the-top video? Are these all web TV boxes?
These are all web TV boxes. You know, I think for most people, the experience is likely to be either coming through a game console, that Xbox Live service, or using their Nintendo Wii to watch Netflix, or it's going to come to a connected TV or connected Blu-ray player. Samsung is one of the leaders, and it's because people in South Korea use the internet on their TV for things we couldn't imagine. You can apply for a driver's license in Korea on your TV. So Samsung and LG have really been pioneers of bringing applications like you're used to on your iPhone to the TV. And then an American company based in California called Vizio is a low-cost provider that's also put a very feature-rich set, and Sony's on board as well. Almost every Blu-ray player you find has an internet connection and supports Netflix. And then depending on which brand you get, you'll get a number of different services. And it is a puzzle, and you do have to look. I find one of the most useful sites in terms of looking at which brand has which services is HD Guru. And if you look at some of their articles, they have some really good tables that say, okay, if I want Netflix and Hulu Plus, which boxes can I get?
I'm sort of astounded at the welter of options you're describing here. And never mind just the boxes and all the different roads to this, but at the heart of it there, I mean, there's just, in this realm, there's no such thing anymore as what we used to mean by, I'm going to watch TV. I mean, you would sit down, there'd be 300, but you just kind of plod around through the channels. It was just one big feed over the air or from the cable company. I mean, this you're active, you're in it, and depending what you choose, whether it's $99 Apple TV or $400 Sony Internet TV, you're going to have different options. You're going to have access to different, entertainment, information, you name it.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the most interesting things is it's no longer about you going to the TV. It's about the TV coming to you at the time you want, at the place you want, and the content you want. You're talking about 300 channels, but we're talking about 2,000 channels. If you look at the video on demand libraries that even mm-hmm. people like Comcast have assembled, if you look at the library on Netflix, if you look at what you can get on YouTube, there are new internet-only TV stations. One that I follow is called Revision 3, and they have programs that they produce only to the internet. So if you're a scuba diving junkie, you can only watch things about scuba diving.
What percentage of the country? We got it. What percentage of Americans do you think are ready for this? Is it 20% who are, 40 and under? Is it 30%? Is it 80%? I mean, this is different.
I think a lot more Americans are ready for it than you might initially mm-hmm. think. 15% mm-hmm. Of American households have a Netflix subscription. So it's clearly in the 30s, 40s, 50% right now. I've spoken to people in every age bracket mm-hmm. who have hooked up a Roku box to their TV and been pleased with the experience.
Cable must be going nuts. Isn't this a direct threat to the cable era?
It is a direct threat to the cable era, and I think that the cable companies are trying to adapt. Strangely, the satellite companies, DirecTV and Dish Network, have been a little faster moving at it than the cable companies. And it's strange because they don't control the broadband connection into your house. They're providing the TV service and someone else is providing your internet service. But because of the limitations of satellite technology, where it's pretty much beaming to you and you're not beaming very much back, they've been early adopters of this, but Comcast is looking at it as well.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about web TV, what it is, how it works, and whether it's going to take over the world, maybe the cable world, the television world, or not. Sam Rosen joins us from Phoenix, Arizona. And Sam, let's hear what people have to say. Melissa, Nashville, Tennessee. You're on the air, Melissa. What do you know?
Hi. Well, I guess I'm an extreme example, but my husband and I have never even owned a TV, and we do everything streaming over the internet.
You are so hip, Melissa. What do you do? What do you do?
Well, we have a Netflix subscription, so we pay $9.99 a month, yeah. as opposed to some of our friends who are paying $120 on up a month, and we watch all the same shows. So we'll use like the network websites like ABC, and we use Hulu, and, of course, Netflix, and we get all of the same content, but we're paying, like, a fraction of what everybody else is.
So that's, in effect, web TV, but do you watch it on a TV or on your laptop, your PC? Where do you grab this?
No, we watch it on our laptop, and we have, like, a nice little stand that elevates it, and it works for us.
So you got your own web TV going on, and right up there on the laptop. Melissa, that's terrific. We'll talk about that. Thank you. Jacques, one more. Fairfield, Connecticut. Jacques, you're on the air.
Hi there. Yeah, I think a lot of this is all about ergonomics and design, and we're concentrating on the content question and the infrastructure question, but really it's about design. If you think about Gateway Computer, anybody who's remembered that dinosaur, from, mm-hmm. they actually tried this. They had a destination PC. It was a big screen, and it came with a keyboard that was wireless, and you would type stuff, and you would surf the net, and you would access your PC, but it bombed. And I think the reason for that is the concept of screen distance versus proaction and passivity.
Do you want everything the internet has to offer on your quote-unquote television, Jacques?
No. See, it's not about that. It's about how humans interact with their tools.
You say it's not about that, but a whole lot of companies are saying, oh, yeah, it's about that, and here we go.
Sure. I mean, I understand that point, but if you mm-hmm. think about it, if you're in a lean-back device, mm-hmm. like a TV, you're in a passive state. You don't want to be in a proactive, lean-forward type of mentality. So it's a very difficult thing. Nobody wants a keyboard in their laptop. How are you going to interface with it? Screen distance affects the interface. The previous caller, nailed it on the head. She doesn't watch it on her TV. She watches it on a laptop that's 3 feet away, so that's still reachable by her hands.
Jacques, these are great questions. We're going to pick them up. I'm so glad you raised them. The ergonomics of this and how it all flies. One more first here. Benjamin Corvin, Kentucky. Benjamin, you're on the air.
Yes. I use the Amazon. It has the Unbox, which is you get like Sons of Anarchy and Justified and any basic TV shows, and they're like $2, which instead of paying a $80 satellite bill, I end up paying like $20-$30 a month to watch whatever I want.
So you buy your TV one show at a time on web TV in effect, Benjamin?
Yes.
And is that okay for you, or is that not a lot of decisions to make? It's not like sitting back in the old-fashioned way and just letting it roll over you.
No, I like that a lot better because the commercials, they actually go to whatever you're interested in because they put all these cookies on you, so they know what you look at anyway. And at least that way, I'm not sitting through some boring commercial that has nothing to do with me.
Benjamin, I've got it, and I appreciate your call very much. Wow, this is really interesting. You can hear the range of listeners right there. Sam Rosen with ABI Research. Stand by in Phoenix. We've got as well with us right now from Millville, New Jersey, Jim Barthold. He's editor of FierceCable.com. It's an online newsletter, covers the cable industry. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Yep, thank you for having me. I've been listening. I think it's interesting, and before I get started, I do want to say I cover cable. I'm not part of cable, and so I'm not making any apologies for these guys, but I have found in years and years of watching cable that I don't think the threat of web TV is that big to cable, and I think what's going to happen is you're going to see this whole experience just kind of blend into that box you get from your cable guys or your telephone guys or even your satellite guys.
Well, you may be right, you may be wrong, but I mean, two out of three of our first callers say, you know, they've cut the cord, they're saving a lot of money, they're watching web TV, and they don't want cable. What about that? Why do you think that, you know, millions won't go that way? Maybe they have already.
Because I think people are essentially looking for the easiest thing to use. I spend all day typing on a computer and looking at a computer. When it gets time to watch television, I want it presented to me, and I want to be able to choose from it. And eventually, I want to be able to choose websites. I want to see YouTube on there or whatever, but I also want to see my entertainment TV. And I think that's the way everybody's grown up with TV. I don't think TV is the same since they had the 500-channel universe, and everybody could go in and say, hey, look at all these programs we can watch. I don't think it's ever been the same since then, and I think web TV is just going to be the next piece of that. Instead of saying, well, I want to go to TBS, you say, oh, I want to go to YouTube. And you get the same experience on your screen. And I think because the pipe comes in, the broadband pipe comes in,
yep,
and because most people have a box from their cable or telco or satellite provider, it's just going to be a natural progression there.
Jim, hold the thought. Sam Rosen, what do you say, fork in the road here? Two different kinds of viewing populations in America, or one big fusion where cable offers you all this stuff? A lot of players are making a bet that it's not going to be that cable-dominated future. The broadband connection may come from cable, but the way you use it, fork in the road or not here, Sam?
I think there is a fork in the road. I do think cable will remain an important part of the American media landscape. I think Jock spoke about the lean back, as did Jim. And, you know, that's very true. And I think that this generation of technology has better user interface, more crafted around that 10-foot distance, a new set of keyboards that they're trying, a new set of menus that they're trying. And I think that's really going to help to bridge that gap. What I hear from Melissa is also very common among young people who leave college, that they may not hook up to cable for several years. What was interesting to me is that all of your callers spoke about getting video through legal sources. And from what I understand, there's a lot of illegal sources out there as well. So that was very interesting to me.
Sam, let me ask you, Melissa in Nashville says that, you know, they do it and it's cheap and they love it, but it's just a laptop on a stand. Now, that's not what the retailers like to think of, or Apple TV, I guess, or Google TV as web TV. I mean, they want it on a big screen. What's the advantage of a box and a big screen over a laptop on a stand in the living room or den or wherever, Sam?
Well, I think that the distance, the big screen, is very important to a lot of people. I myself prefer watching things on a bigger screen than even my 24-inch computer monitor. I think that it does lead to a more relaxing experience, a more engaging experience. And so I think Melissa's experience might be common for young people, but I think over time they'll migrate into a larger screen with content coming from multiple sources.
Let's get a caller from Charleston, South Carolina. Hunter, thanks for calling. You're on the air, Hunter. What do you know?
Oh, thanks for having me. I think I'm just as blown away as you are, Tom, by, you know, what's available now on the internet.
And it's amazing.
It's available right now. I think if your mind's blown, like you said before the last break, mm-hmm. you can participate right now with your laptop. Most of them have a VGA output and audio
mm-hmm.
output.
Yep.
You plug that into your flat screen TV, which most of them have, and you know you can watch Frontlines. I can't tell you, I can watch pretty much whatever I want whenever I want. And but be it a Frontline documentary or you know the Netflix account I pay a couple bucks a month for, it's all there, and you don't need to wait for a TV, you know, to come out and say, well, this is how you do it. It's available if you're willing to just invest really just a half an hour, if that, of just basic understanding of how to connect it. You don't need to wait for a Google TV or a Sony TV to tell you how to do it. It's there now.
So are you into cable anymore, Hunter, or are you just going straight to your own sources for video and TV entertainment?
Well, in an interest of full disclosure, I do certainly still have cable, and it's really for nothing else just other than sports. I mean, everything I look at, I'm not using torrents. I'm doing everything legally. I wouldn't necessarily have to do it. I don't need to have cable. I could go to a Justin TV and probably illegally watch, you know, boxing matches and NFL and Super Bowl, but I choose not to do that. But I tell you the truth, if I wasn't tethered by a bundle through Comcast, I would, and I had some ability to get to the internet without needing that,
yep.
which subsequently needs TV because of the way they price it, whatever. I wouldn't have any of that. I'd probably just, you know, do without that stuff, watch whatever I want. But I do still have cable, and it's really for sports and the fact that it behooves me to have it because of some bundle package.
Hunter, you're great. Let me ask you a couple more questions here. I mean, how do you think about TV at this point? You know, people used to say, you know, what's on? What's on TV? Do you even think about it that way, or is it just, yeah?
Good. Well, I as a 28-year-old, and sorry to cut you off, as a 28-year-old, I think it's funny because one of the guests I think you had mentioned that, you know, they still kind of want to be, they want to be able to turn on and have choosing, but at the same time have it presented to them. And I don't see it that way. I don't know if it's, you know, the age group or the fact that I'm, you know, super ADD, but I can pretty much, I like the fact that I can put on my computer, I can say, hey, I want to watch this Frontline about whatever, or hey, I want to watch this Netflix about whatever, you know, this mindless mm-hmm. movie or this cartoon or this Charlie Brown because it's Christmas. I like the fact that I can do that. And, I don't see any benefit to having it. For me personally, coming home and kind of, I don't want to think. I just want to turn on the TV and have it kind of just wash over me whenever they see fit kind of thing.
So when you're doing it, are you multitasking or interspersing? Are you watching that documentary or that movie and reading your Facebook page at the same time? Are you, you know, sort of clipping back and forth or doing things sequentially? How's it work, Hunter?
Yeah, I definitely so. I mean, I'm not when I want to. I mean, like there's this, you know, term alt tabbing. You hit alt and tab, you can go to the next
sure,
thing.
Sure.
If I'm not careful, I'll be alt tabbing through, you know, 15, 20 different screens, but that's not, I don't think I'm benefiting from that. I think really.
But you do it. You might have a movie and a TV show and, you know, your email or, I don't know, IMing open and all that at once.
Or maybe I'm just doing my dishes and listening to one of your archived shows. It just happens
right on
my TV speaker. I mean, it is what it is. Sometimes you're multitasking. Sometimes you're sucked into whatever gripping thing you're watching. It can run the gamut.
Hunter, thank you so much for your call from Charleston. Jim Barthold, how does cable hang on to that young man and young women just like him and their ilk? I mean, he's off and running. He's in web TV, you know, squared.
I had a question for Hunter, actually. If all of that came part of your bundle and all of a sudden you didn't need the Netflix box, you didn't need the other box, it just all came in through your cable box, would that be sufficient? Would that keep you watching this? Or does, and this is my coverage of cable, does mm-hmm. cable need to do something more? And I mean, besides lower prices, everybody knows they have to lower the prices, but do they need to do something more to retain somebody like you?
Well, that's pretty interesting. I mean, Sam, can cable offer it all the same stuff that Hunter's enjoying there? Economic sense in that? Sam, what do you say?
Yeah, cable has the relationships with the content providers. If you look in Europe, the BBC is about to launch something called UView, which is basically TV on demand over a two-week period that's pretty much free, or, to be fair, subsidized by every British taxpayer at about $100 a year. And so the cable companies can get there. As I said, a lot of the cable boxes are going to be taking some of these same features that the internet adapters have and that the connected Blu-rays have over time. DirecTV has a really rich Samsung box. They don't like to advertise because they don't want everyone calling on their phone and requesting the latest box. Yeah. But it's out there.
Boy.
And it is coming together.
Let's get a call from Pocatello, Idaho. Brad, thanks for calling. You're on the air, Brad.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I enjoy a lot of different media, and I currently have a Wii with Netflix streaming, and I enjoy that. What I'm curious is how soon am I going to be able to have on-demand content through my XM or Sirius or some other satellite beaming to my car? So if I want to watch something on demand, you know, not on my BlackBerry or iPhone, but something larger streaming into an antenna on my car.
Brad, can I ask you, we'll go to that, but when would you watch television or video in your car? In what circumstances?
Oh, well, it's usually a family situation. You know, you got kids in the back seat and you're, you know, driving down
watch
the road.
This. Mm-hmm. We got it. Let us pick it up. Sam Rosen, what do you say to Brad? You know, when are we going to have on-demand video down from satellite for people who are driving, kids in the backseat? You know.
Yeah, well, the radio and the and video are two different things in the car. Pandora is said to be releasing a set of radios in cars next year, and that will be much the on-demand type of
radio. That's audio.
Channel.
What about video? On-demand video, is it coming?
So video, it is coming, and it's coming over a cell phone network to your car. It's not really catching traction in the U.S. again, but in Korea and in China, people use their cell phones, and there's systems that you can install in your car that do it. So there doesn't seem to be the demand in the U.S. Qualcomm had a Flow TV system that was very portable, like a portable DVD player, and they just shut down the service.
John Moe, you said, of course, everybody knows cable costs have to come down, or prices. I mean, can they really do that and still offer what they offer? They share that money with an awful lot of big, you know, entertainment media companies who produce all that content. I mean, if you unravel the bundle, does the whole industry come apart, John? Jim Barthold, I mean, excuse me.
Yeah, before I get to that, I wanted to point out that there's also mobile digital TV. It's kind of been below the radar screen, but it's the broadcasters actually going out there, and they were talking about one of their big markets was putting their broadcast signals in cars.
Good, thanks. What about
demand,
the question?
But it's television.
Yeah.
But, the prices are going to be the hairy subject, aren't they? I mean, programmers and broadcasters, you just saw a real nasty fight with Cablevision and Fox. Time Warner's got something going now. Somewhere there's going to be a breaking point there on how much the programmers get for their content, which I think is also going to be the breaking point for web TV when it comes to traditional television media. Not the YouTube, not the over-the-top, but the traditional video that people want to watch, that people are picking up their Netflix to see or their Hulu. Those costs are going to be more than the technology, what's going to drive this whole thing and what's going to make it happen or not happen.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about web TV, what it is, how it works, and whether it's going to take over the world. Sam Rosen has joined us from Phoenix, Arizona, and ABI Research there. Jim Barthold from FierceCable.com is with us from Millville, New Jersey. Lots of web comments here. It's really interesting. Here's Leah in Somerville, Massachusetts, says, I watch TV online using Hulu and Netflix. I love the fact I can watch shows from South Korea, other countries. Cable simply doesn't provide that kind of access to such a range of programming. And for her, she says, my laptop suits me just fine instead of a large TV. Josette says, for me, Television has been gone for a decade. I don't own one. I get all the news I want from NPR and the web, ditto for entertainment, from Jon Stewart to PBS's new Sherlock Holmes. She gets everything she wants there. She finds sports on foreign sites. She's way out there. Earl Shepherd writes, he says, I'm 68 years old and web TV is the only way to go. I haven't watched regular TV in years. But Suli writes from New Haven, Connecticut, I gotta admit, the more the industry pushes this degree of media saturation, the less I want it. Thank you, media, for driving me to a simpler life. She's saying no thanks to the whole kit and caboodle. Wow. John Moe joins us right now from Minneapolis, Minnesota. He's host of American Public Media's Marketplace Tech Report for a big view here. John Moe, thanks very much for being with us.
No, you're welcome, Tom. Thanks.
Where is this taking us? Does everybody cut the cord? Are we watching something all the time, plus organizing our photos and, you know, IMing Aunt Sally? Where are we headed here, John?
It's exhausting, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's wonderful. I'm not sure which. What do you think?
Well, I think it's heading in all different directions. I think the way this kind of technology works is that instead of everybody getting on one train, we're all at a station with different trains going off in all directions. So, you know, some people might choose the ease of cable. I mean, there is something, when you get down to the vegging out of all of it, there is something nice about just turning on the TV, looking at some different channels, and just seeing what's on. And, you know, the latest statistics show that that is still how most people are receiving their media. Now, at my house, we had, we have the Netflix hooked up to the Wii, because that was a path of less resistance. We already had the Wii for the kids and Netflix came along and so now we might watch the local news on our cable and, you know, maybe Letterman's monologue or something. But then my wife and I have been diving into this Canadian series called Slings and Arrows, which is wonderful that we've never heard of before. And so we might, you know, cap off the night by watching one of those. So, you know, it's kind of a sampler play. You can choose to go in a lot of different directions, or you can choose one steady path. You can burn the cable box and never look at it again, or you can bounce around a little.
Or go to web TV where there are a million ways to do it. I mean, it can sound like an overwhelming welter. On the other hand,
yeah,
people are getting really good at navigating those welters. And yeah, you have people out there saying, we'll make it simple for you. Here's a little bit, John, from Apple's second generation TV. Came out in September. And here's a video on their website touting this is Apple TV's simplicity.
The all-new Apple TV. It's been completely redesigned to stream amazing HD content to your HD TV. There's no hard drive, no syncing, no storage to manage. So it's really small and it's really simple. All you need is an internet connection.
It's really small and it's really simple. But then, you know, this one, John, Mo, like a lot of others, it doesn't offer everything. I mean, NBC and CBS are not accessible through Apple TV. And you go on and you sort of buy everything you watch, like iTunes yeah, style, I guess. And Google TV, you can't get Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS. They won't display it through Google TV. It doesn't sound simple to me.
Well, I am stunned at how Google especially seems to have really miscalculated the whole launch of Google TV. It's just amazing that they would come out and just assume that all these TV networks would want to play along and lose a lot of the revenue that they would get from broadcasting their stations. So at the moment, I mean, Google TV is a really interesting bit of technology with some real headaches going on in the areas of their partnership. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I like YouTube. I like watching a baby monkey riding on the back of a pig as much as the next guy. But it's not how I'm going to, you know, enjoy. It's not what I'm going to sit on my couch and really enjoy. I'd rather dive into Battlestar Galactica. I mean, I think a lot of this stuff is, you know, it is simple. It is sort of the, you know, where, but it's going to require judgment. It's going to require you to have your own knowledge of the kind of things you like and the ability to find those things. So, you know, you get more selection, but more is asked of you as mm-hmm. an active participant, as your own programmer.
Attitudes and expectations really changing. Let's get a call from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the air, Michael.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. My point is the fact that, you know, with cable, you have to take what they want to give you, you know, whatever package.
Right.
And so if you only like to watch, you know, a few little channels, you know, you're kind of stuck watching everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then my other point is the fact...
Or not watching it, Michael, and paying for it anyway.
Yes.
Right.
And then, of course, the Nielsen ratings, you know, they cancel shows because ratings aren't so whatever. But they never take into account the fact that the of the rebroadcast on the web or their foreign viewership, so which kind of like puts a crimp on it.
Yeah. Yep.
And then, of course, there's also the delay. If you missed it that night on TV, you could always usually go on Hulu, but then they've started delaying.
So are you out there in web TV, Hulu land already, Michael? Oh,
I've been out there for a long time. I watch most of my programming on my computer with a high-definition flat screen, surround, or I can just go ahead and broadcast it over to my my TV.
Yeah, talk about central control out the window, John. I mean, people just they want what they want when they want it. They don't want any kind of ratings on it because hey, they're going to have access to it. But I don't know what ratings is interesting. What happens in this realm? I mean, how do people know who's watching what? Can you still count it all up Nielsen style or not?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, that's what's really interesting is the field of information becomes much more of a meritocracy than it would be. The good shows will rise to the top. The good programming will rise to the top. I mean, when you look at the really, really popular, even the really popular YouTube content, it's stuff that has been, you've seen on everybody's Facebook page. People have sent you these clips. It becomes a meme. It becomes part of a cultural understanding. And so I think it kind of represents a pretty cool opportunity because if we know, you know, stats on what web pages people are calling up and what web services people are calling up are much more reliable than how people are tapping into a broadcast signal or what they're showing, you know, what the Nielsen ratings show about what they're watching. So in that sense, we are moving to an era where we will have a more granular understanding of what people like, what shows are popular, what people are responding to. So, I mean, in one sense, we'll have more selection, and you know, if you're really into Bulgarian folk music, you'll mm-hmm. find that Bulgarian folk music TV show that that would never show up on NBC. But at the same time, it you know, you like to share things with people, and you like to be a part of things everybody's understanding. And I think there's probably more of a chance for those sorts of events to develop.
Jim Barthold at FierceCable.com. If the viewers sort of fragment into all kinds of ways of viewing, coming at it from a million angles, many of them not necessarily going through cable. Are those big shows even going to be there? Will there be the economic structure that has supported, you know, Hollywood, Burbank, all the rest as we've known it, Jim?
That's pretty much the question, except that the internet gives you a real good opportunity to track viewers. I think they've had a problem with that since DVRs came in, and people could say, oh, okay, I can't stay up till 11 to watch that. I'll record it and watch it the next day. And that's another part of it. That's another part of the on-demand, the whole on-demand thing. You can record it. You can sit easily and watch it. And, you know, when you talk about all these new boxes and all these new things, I only have one thing I'd bring up, and that's TiVo. TiVo was the way to go until cable incorporated it, and telcos incorporated it, and satellite operators incorporated it. I'm thinking the same thing with all these over-the-tops and all these web TV. They just get incorporated. They just become part of it with a better tracking system because it relates back to the IP stream.
Yeah, maybe, but they have a cost challenge just for starters. I mean, average cable bill in this country is $70-$75 bucks a month. We've got listeners saying, "Hey, I'm paying $9.99 or whatever it is, and I'm happy." Hard for cable to hold its realm together if it's got to cut back to something like that. I'll come back to there, Jim. Monica in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Monica, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about how earlier when you said that. Watching experience, you'd really have to, if you wanted to use any kind of online system mm-hmm. for your TV, you'd really have to already know what you like to go see it. But I use Netflix completely now, and they track what I watch, and I rate things. And because of that, I get so many more suggestions, and wow. I'm able to see so many more different things than TV. And it's really, really nice, and I feel like my horizons are opened because of it. And the youth spends most of their time on the internet now. I don't see how it would be much different for them just to transfer to TV.
Monica, you sound just terrific. I mean, what's the range of things that you watch through Netflix?
Well, I started first with just movies, but if I rated movies, then they gave me TV shows I would like, and now I watch a lot of foreign TV shows, a lot of new documentaries. The opportunity for me to see educational TV really grew when I got Netflix because I can't afford, you know, the National Geographic channels and stuff. I'm a college student, but that really opened up a lot more viewing for me because it is only $9.99 a month as opposed to, like, $80 to $100 a month, and I, you know, otherwise I wouldn't be able to watch those kind of things.
Well, there's the future, and you are it, Monica. Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Call again. Richard in Lewisburg, Tennessee. Richard, you're on the air.
There's a lot of money we're talking about here and a lot of very powerful companies. I'm wondering if there's any way some of these companies to protect their investment can thwart this development and perhaps through K Street or by other means.
That's interesting. I don't know. John Moe, do you see, you know, the cable cabal getting its, mustering the powers that be and killing this thing? It's out of the cradle already, but going after the big toddler?
I mean, you know, you look at what's happening with Comcast and with their proposed acquisition of NBC Universal, and it really, it's a deal that was first announced over a year ago and still hasn't been approved. It looks like it might be about to be approved, but it might come with some conditions like Comcast would have to sell off that stake that NBC has in Hulu so that they couldn't be in a situation where suddenly if you're a Comcast subscriber and you want to watch Hulu and, you know, Comcast is your internet provider, that they wouldn't then be able to charge you extra to see non-NBC shows or block non-Comcast ISP subscribers from seeing NBC shows. But you could be in a situation really soon where you can watch either Comcast-owned NBC shows or Comcast-owned Universal Studio movies coming through either your Comcast internet or your Comcast cable TV. That's a lot of times to say the word Comcast altogether.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. And a lot at stake. Oh, boy. And, John, I wanted to ask you about Monica, that sort of liberated viewer there. I mean, she's, talk about off the hook. She's, you know, nobody's got a leash on her. She's paying $9.99. She's a college student, and she's watching stuff from all over the world. It's molding itself to what she's interested in. There's a talk about a liberated viewer who's cut the cord. She's out there.
Well, again, if you want to make an investment and really take a conscious approach to your programming, I mean, I have a 10-year-old son.
You mean your personal programming?
Your personal programming.
Right.
I have a 10-year-old son, and I look at the recently watched queue after he's done on the TV, and it's like all these documentaries about ancient Egypt. And, you know, on the one hand, you're like, get off the TV, go outside and enjoy life. But on the other hand, it's like, way to geek out on ancient Egypt. That's kind of awesome.
But what happens to the old, you know, TV America? I mean, the internet's already sent us in a lot of directions, and not to weep for it, but it really does take away a commons that may have been a couch potato commons, but it was a commons.
But I think now you have an internet commons. Now you have a cultural understanding of a culture that has transformed. I mean, we still have telephones. We just don't have them on the spirally line attached to the wall in the kitchen anymore. So it's an evolution, but I think there can still be, I mean, I'll go on Facebook and my friend, a friend of mine said, hey, there's this great documentary on a Harvard versus Yale football game, from 1968 or something. Mm. You should go watch it. And so we still have that same cultural understanding. I recommend, you know, shows to friends all the time. And so I think that's still there, but it's definitely more participatory. It's more work, but maybe more rewarding too.
Sam Rosen in Phoenix, are we in the sort of, it may be the year of web TV with the explosion of options and a lot of people getting in here if they aren't already, but are we still in the like early video days, you know, VHS versus beta? You're going to buy something this year and 18 months from now, it's a dinosaur gone, not happening. What about that, Sam?
I think that most of these technologies have legs. I have a Sony Blu-ray player, and every 3 months or so, I get an update that gives me some new programming. There's also a lot of the software that's actually happening out in what we call the cloud, which is their servers, not in my house. And so they have a lot of adaptability to change that. So I think that this current crop of, let's call them Blu-ray 2.0 players, has a pretty good life ahead of them. It might be 3 to 5 years, which is about as long as people expect from a DVD player. The TVs tend to have a little bit of a longer lifespan, but if you have that internet-connected TV integrated into your TV, the panel might outlast that programming that you have inside of it.
And what percentage of people who go the web TV route do you think at this point have that over-the-top video, some sort of box, instead of just the laptop on a stand? I mean, what percentage are going to the sort of whole enchilada on the big TV screen?
You know, about 40 to 50% of American households have game consoles. The connected Blu-ray players is down in the 10% range.
And these typically connected to the big screen.
Yeah, and internet adapter boxes are still a really, really small number. So I think that we're getting to the point where maybe 20, 30% of America has some box hooked up to the TV that's not a laptop.
Well, maybe Santa's coming with a sleigh full of more of those. There are a zillion choices out there, and we can hear just in this hour people snapping them up like crazy. There's the sound of American culture and avenues to it, avenues to world culture changing beneath our feet, sort of second by second. Really interesting. Terrific to have all of you with us. Sam Rosen with ABI Research. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
Jim Barthold with FierceCable.com. Thank you, Jim, for being here.
Hey, anytime. Invite me back anytime.
Okay, and John Moe, ever going to be the same, John?
No, never going to be the same.
It's all
better and worse also.
Better and worse. And life as we know it. John Moe in Minneapolis with American Public Media's Marketplace Tech Report. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.